Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
All right, everybody, welcome back into another live edition of the Patriots Beat podcast here on the CLNS Media Network, presented by our friends over at Prize Picks. It is Brian Hunt and Pat's Pulpit back with Alex Barth for a back-to-back show here to get into the final thoughts on the NFL Combine, and then we will talk about some free agents. We had some, you know, some news today, some rumors throughout the week as free agency is just over a week away here. Officially, that legal tampering period starts in a week, so things will get moving from a free agent perspective. But we can go back to the combine again. We, you know, went pretty in depth on a lot of these positions yesterday, so make sure you check that out if you did not already. But we did get on here live before the offensive linemen worked out, the specialists worked out. Shame on NFL Network for cutting away from the specialist workout and not.
Yeah, what was that?
I don't know. That was I get we complained that the broadcast was way too long, but if you're going to, and they cut the time down, but like, let's show the specialist. Let's get some Tory Taylor out.
Right. If you're going to make me wait around, if you're going to tease me all day with quarterbacks and linemen, at least, you know, let's get the payoff. Let's get the specialists.
It looked like there was like a group of Irish specialists there or something. I kept seeing on Twitter. So that would have been fun to watch, but fortunately, we weren't able to do that. So we can start with some of the offensive linemen. We knew it was a big group, talented group of tackles, even some, you know, good interior guys, and they kind of showed out yesterday as well. So we can start with tackles, and then we can touch on some of the interior guys. But unfortunately, a few guys dropped with injuries: Olufoshanu, Amarius Mims in the 40. But out of the guys who kind of ran and competed athletically throughout those drills, were there anyone kind of specifically, was there one, maybe one big guy that stood out to you? And then we can touch on all the other guys as well.
A lot of big guys, Brian. It was linemen. Sorry, I'm just getting my notes here. I just real quick on the injuries. I wonder how much longer linemen are going to be running the 40. It doesn't mean anything. The 40 yard number, these guys are never running 40 yards uninterrupted. I wonder if they shorten it to a 20. Or do some other sort of explosiveness test, maybe some sort of like leg press or something. But yeah, I wonder how much longer guys are going to run it, or if guys just aren't going to take it seriously, if they're going to get to 20 yards and then just kind of, you know, shut it down. But in terms of the guys that showed up, it was an impressive group, and we kind of expected that. I don't think it came out of nowhere. But if I had to go with one winner, to me, it's Troy Fitanu from Washington. First of all, we weren't sure if he was going to hit that 33-inch mark with his arms that the NFL kind of uses as the cutoff for – they do for tackles and guards. I mean, the evidence the last 10 years backs that up almost exclusively, at least in terms of first-round picks, where Fitanu is supposed to go. I had him as one of the Patriots' two picks in my first-round mock. I put out today on 98.5thesportshub.com if you want to check that out. But cleared the 33-inch handily, 34.5. Yeah. 6'4", 317, and then tested super well, moved super well. The arm length thing's a big part of it. You know, there were other guys who tested really well too, but you throw in that we weren't sure if he was going to be a guard or a tackle, and I think you comfortably say he had the best day.
Yeah, I was with you on that. There still seemed like some chatter that he might push inside to guard, but I think he kind of earned the right with the measurements and then the performance on the field to at least start at tackle at the next level. But going back to the 40 yard dash,
I agree, like it could happen eventually for sure that he moves into guard, but he's going to start his career as a tackle.
Yeah. But yeah, just going back to the 40-yard dash, it is interesting because, you know, all those injuries that seem to occur right around like the 30-yard line or in that 30 to 40-yard range. And that was the discussion on the broadcast. Like they had Taylor Lewan on, who's, you know, obviously was an offensive tackle. He kind of said, shorten that 20, 30 yards. The 10-yard split is really what you take away from it. So it would be interesting to see if they kind of move away from that. Maybe if guys start like opting out of that and you only have a few guys running it, maybe they, you know, try to shorten that down to 20, 30 yards in the future. But also, what's your take on this one? Someone says in the chat, height and weight span measurements are useless at the end of the day. If you can play, you can play. I know that was a big thing, you know, arm length, something Dante Scarnecchia wasn't really always a fan of. He kind of abided by that philosophy. Like if you can play, you can play. But I think, you know, especially with the arm length at tackle, it's big. Like you saw Peter Skoronski bump inside last year to guard. I think there's like a pretty good history. I don't have the exact number that if you're under that certain threshold, you might have the number. Maybe it's like
last 10 years, only two guys were picked in the first round under 33-inch arm as tackles. And one of them, Justin Pugh, became a tackle a few years later. The other is Caleb McGarry, who's like a decent player, but that's one example of a guy in the last 10. How many tackles went in the first round in the last 10 years, right? One guy worked out. I'm with you. If you can play, you can play, but there are certain parameters and there's just certain things that you're going to need to ask guys to do if they can't physically do them. At least when it comes to height and weight for linemen, if there's certain things you're going to ask guys to do and they can't physically do them, you want to know that. I think in other positions, the height and weight measurements are relevant for, among other reasons, durability. We've talked a lot about Jaden Daniels' build. We've talked a lot about JJ McCarthy's build. The height as well, with guys like Bo Nix and Spencer Rattler. Like there's just certain shortcomings that come along with that. Can they be overcome? Yes, they can. Drew Brees had a great career, but for every one of Drew Brees, how many 6-foot flat quarterbacks never made it because they couldn't get the ball over the line of scrimmage? So it is, I think, important.
Yep, I agree with you there. But yeah, I think Fatanu was kind of the big winner at that offensive tackle spot. Joe Alt probably solidified himself as the number one tackle. I think like the only time he really struggled was, you know, he looked kind of awkward taking those pass pro sets on the right side, which, you know, he obviously was a left tackle, which won't matter to a team like New England if they get him because he's going to be the blind side protector. But maybe if you're a team like the Chargers who has Rashawn right. Slater out there, that might be something they take into consideration. So he's probably, you know, solidified himself as tackle one. Unfortunately, Alu Fashanu, who's with him in those top two tackles, got hurt running the 40. So I think they said he expects to be ready at his pro day. And
yeah, he said it was
Monday. So hopefully we see him there. But outside of that, Talese Fuaga from Oregon State probably locked himself into that, you know, middle first round.
He was awesome. Yeah. I had him going. I should pull my mock up. I had him going in the top 20. I had him ahead of some other notable tackles. Where did I have him? I had him.
You probably think like maybe the Jets right around low teens.
Well, so what I did, I actually had the Jets because you mentioned the thing with Alt not being able to play right tackle. And that's a legitimate concern. Now, most teams are looking for left tackle. The Chargers are in this unique spot where they have Rashawn Slater. I have the Jets trading up to 5 and get Joe Alt. And that is something I would not rule out. I think they know they've got to maximize the years they have with Aaron Rodgers. They can afford to give up the asset. I actually had the Chargers trading down again and taking Fuag at 14, but I had him ahead of Amarius Mims. I had him ahead of J.C. Latham. I had him ahead of Fatanu, ahead of who's the last guy I'm blanking on, Guyton. So like and I believe that. I think he was just so dominant. If he was a left tackle, I think you're talking about him as potentially the second tackle off the board. I think it becomes a conversation him and Fashanu, but he's just a right tackle, Fuanga. I don't think he's going to play left tackle in the NFL. And it's an inherent positional value thing. It's why X receivers go before slot receivers, even if the slot receiver is really, really, really good. It's just kind of the way the positions are valued. And that's the biggest knock on him probably right now. It's just that he doesn't have that positional flexibility.
Yep. But maybe some tackles more in the Patriots range, in the, you know, mid to late 30s. BYU's Kingsley Sumatoa. You know, we knew he was kind of this freakish athlete. He was on the Athletics Freaks list. You know, he's a guy, big guy with all the physical tools. He showed out. He continues to look like a strong option in that range. Then, you know, your guy, Patrick Paul, for a guy who measured in at 6'7", 331 pounds. He ran a 177 10-yard split. So that was pretty impressive from Patrick Paul. But those two guys, you know, most of those guys we were talking about before, maybe, you know, Joe Alt, you have to take like at three or right. in the top 10. And Fuaga, as you said, maybe a mid first round pick. But Kingsley and Patrick Paul look like maybe if someone could slide out of the first round and you get at 34, those two guys are in that range.
The other really interesting thing about it to me, and those guys are good, but whether they double up at tackle or you bring back Michael Nwenu, you sign Tyron Smith as a bridge tackle and you get one of these guys later. The biggest takeaway for me from the combine, from the offensive lineman, was we've kind of talked about after 50, this thing drops off. And Javon Foster is a guy we've talked about. We kind of like on day three, Roger Rosengarten kind of like on day three, but that was really it.
He had a good day.
He did have a good day. There are more tackles that are like true project guys, I think, than I initially realized. And I don't know that you draft this guy, you start him year one. You'd still, again, need to sign a Tyron Smith, need to bring back Michael Nwenu. I'm not comfortable putting him on the field year one, week one. But, you know, there are some guys that tested super well. And then the thing is, like, these guys test well. You go back, you watch the tape, and you kind of realize, because it's impossible to keep track of all 300 of these guys or 500 or whatever it is. Sometimes you just need to see a guy test or need to see him do something at the Senior Bowl, the Shrine Bowl, to get him on your radar. And one of the guys was Tylan Grable,
yep,
from UCF. So the Packers, I'm sorry, I just pulled up their bios and now I'm hearing Rich Eisen in my headphones, except at least he's not drooling over JJ McCarthy. So the Packers under Wolf generally targeted athleticism more than size. Like, they'll take a tackle, not undersized, but they'll take a tackle who's on the smaller side if he's more athletic versus getting like the mound mover, right? Tylan Grable, 6'6", 306, 33 5/8 inch arm. So he checks all the boxes. He's not, you know, we're not talking about DeJuan Jones, but he's big enough, tested super well, 4.95 40, 169 split, 36.5 inch vertical, 9'9" broad jump. And then I just thought he cruised through the on-field drills. He moved super comfortable. So you get into him. He's not as experienced. He maybe doesn't have the power in his upper body you're looking for at that position right now, but draft him in like the sixth round, throw him in the weight room for a year. You come back, you revisit it next year, and you see if you have a guy. And look, maybe next year also, if you get this draft right and you get your quarterback and you get your wide receiver, maybe next year you can just address tackle top of the draft and it's easy. So Tylan Grable was one guy I like as a, you know, day three project tackle. And the other guy, this guy got a lot of publicity just because of his hair, Frank Crum.
Yep.
6'8", 313, 34 inch arms. Again, just looked super comfortable going through the testing. I think the technique needs to be cleaned up is probably the big thing with him. And, you know, does he get low enough in his stance? Does he use his hands right? But he has the stuff. You can't coach athleticism. You can't coach size. You can coach hand placement. You can coach footwork. Will the guy take the coaching? Can he be effective with the coaching? That's what the whole draft is about, right? That's what it comes down to. But like, these are guys that weren't really on my radar before the combine. And there's a couple more like that, but I think these two are the big ones. Frank Crum from Wyoming and Tylan Grable from UCF that, yeah, if the Patriots grab them middle day three, late day three, again, I wouldn't say their tackle problems are solved for 2024, but is he a guy that could realistically go out there and compete for a starting job in 2025 or even late in 2024? Maybe. Yeah. I think they profiles that kind of guy if you get them the right program.
Yeah. It's definitely interesting. Makes the class a little bit deeper. Right. And that's
right.
Part of the purpose of this is, you know, you have the guys, you know, and you want to see if what the tape says kind of matches with their athletic scores, but then you have some of these guys who test really well, like Frank Crum. Like, not many people are watching Wyoming, and then this guy pops out and now you can go watch him and see how it looks. So it's definitely an intriguing path because, you know, maybe they go quarterback and then they want to get in that wide receiver run at 34, and they miss out on a tackle. But, you know, as Zach kind of says in the chat, you probably need to sign a veteran like Tyron Smith to kind of be able to do that, right? And imagine you're talking about bringing Mike Onwenu back to be your right tackle. So I saw some differing opinions with Tyron Smith. Just for anyone who doesn't know, the Cowboys aren't going to bring him back. It looks like he's hitting free agency and going elsewhere. So, I mean, he's obviously not on the winning timeline in New England. He's an older tackle, but I mean, I think he's a kind of a perfect stopgap or bridge guy if that's the route you go with one of these later younger tackles. You bring Tyron Smith, and then, as you said again, next year in the draft, you might be able to just focus your first round pick on a left tackle or that position.
Yeah, exactly.
Yep. So we'll see there. But any other tackles that kind of stood out? I had, you know, Jordan Morgan. He did, I was just pulling up, he measured under that 33-inch mark. He was like 32.8-inch arms, but he ran a 1.7 10-yard split. So maybe, you know, if you're playing more outside zone in this wide zone, maybe they value a little bit more of that athleticism at the tackle spot, and they can overlook just the, you know, the arms coming up a little bit shorter. But anyone else at the tackle spot that caught your eye?
Not really. Do I have anybody else written down? I with Morgan, it's just, again, I have him written off because the NFL generally writes that guy off.
Yeah.
The NFL generally doesn't take that guy as a tackle. So, I mean, could he be a good guard? Yeah, but if he's not a better player than Peter Skoronski was, and Peter Skoronski had the same arm length, and they moved him to guard. So if he's a guard, what does that say about Jordan Morgan?
Yeah. Interesting to watch there. But we can move into the interior. I know they drafted a bunch of interior guys last year, but maybe it's a position, especially if, you know, David Andrews retires, we haven't got clarity on his future yet. Maybe that's something they dip back into in the later rounds. It was Tanner Bordellini's day. Wisconsin boy just dominated the athletic testing. 4.94 40-yard dash. It was the third fastest three cone of all time for an offensive lineman, and among all-time centers, it broke Jason Kelsey's record from 2011. Which, side note, awesome speech from Jason Kelsey, awesome retirement speech today from him. But Bordellini, he kind of dominated. So maybe if you're looking for a late round center, that's an interesting option. You know, fourth, fifth round, see how far he worked himself up on the draft.
The other guy that stood out to me, we talk about that 10-yard split, and I always look to see, you know, what lineman led in the 10-yard split. Jacob Monk from Duke would be the one other guy I'd put in that conversation.
Yep. And then I just had written down, like, Cooper Beebe and Mason McCormick from South Dakota State. I thought those two guys were pretty impressive as well. They might go a little bit earlier, though.
Probably. Yeah, those are probably day two guys. It's weird because there's really no day one guards. I guess Jackson Powers Johnson's truly center. He can play guard. You can call him what you want, but it does kind of pick up on day two, certainly.
Yep. Good showing from some of those New England guys too. Christian Haynes from UConn had a good game, good performance. Some of those BC guys ran pretty well. So good to see those New England guys. But anything else along the offensive line there for you?
No, I think that was it. It's kind of burnt out at that point. No, I mean, kind of the same thing we talked about the defensive players. I think there was a lot of chalk. I think there was a lot of the guys that you thought were going to test well, tested well.
Yep. Agree with you there. So let's take a very quick break. We will hear from our new friends over at Prize Picks, and then we will come back and we will talk a little bit more, some of the off-field rumors from the combine, as well as a little free agency preview as well.
Football season may be over, but the action on the floor is heating up. Whether it's a tournament season or the fight for a playoff home court, there's no shortage of high-stakes basketball moments this time of year. Get in on the excitement with Prize Picks, America's number one fantasy sports app, where you could turn your hoops knowledge into serious cash. Testing my skills on Prize Picks this season is the most exciting way to play daily fantasy sports. If you have the skills, you can turn $10 into $1,000 with just a few taps. Prize Picks is really simple to play, and I can make my picks and submit my entry in less than 60 seconds. Download the app today and use code CLNS for a first deposit match up to $100. Use the code CLNS for the first deposit match up to $100. Pick more, pick less. It's that easy.
All right. So on to some free agency, some other rumors from the combine. I guess let's start with maybe the franchise tag, because the deadline is tomorrow at 4 p.m. to apply the tag on any free agents. Obviously, Kyle Duggar, Mike Onwenu are the big Patriots to watch. In Indy, Elliott Wolf and Gerard Mayo both kind of said it's an option if they need it. Mayo said, though, it's a preference to, you know, lock up both of these guys long term and keep these core players around for the future. So less than 24 hours away with the tag, where you think they're kind of sitting with both of those guys right now?
There's a report from the Herald that they haven't even discussed the tag with Kyle Duggar. And I don't, if they hope to retain him long term, I don't think they're going to spring it on him last second. Now with Mike Onwenu, it's a lot more complicated because he doesn't have an agent. So using it just to buy time, because those negotiations are going to be complicated, using it to buy time to extend Mike Onwenu still makes the most sense to me. I don't think, even if it was an argument at one point for putting on a Kyle Duggar, the fact is, and I mean, this was as of Sunday, so maybe they call him today, I don't know, but the fact that as of yesterday, they had not spoken with Duggar about the tag, they've talked a lot about respecting people, right? And not just being open with us in the media, but open inside the building and things like that. Slapping the franchise tag on a guy at the last second after not even bringing it up with him kind of goes against that message. Doesn't mean they won't do it, but it would be pretty jarring. So I think it's Mike Onwenu or bust at this point.
Yep. And there was the report that they have a contract offer out there to Kyle Duggar. So we'll see how that kind of shakes out. But yeah, it's a big number. It's 20 and change, or a little bit over 20 for Onwenu.
It's like 20.1, right?
Something yeah.
like
that. But I mean, that's the guy out of those two that you'd hope to keep around long-term if you had to pick, because he does just bring so much value to your club with, you know, guard, tackle, wherever you want to play him. He's just a good football player. So you mentioned the agent, Elliott Wolf said that'll be kind of an interesting wrinkle to deal with. So maybe they, you know, think that's the best route to tag him and at least just extend that period of conversation that they kind of own his rights and are able to keep negotiating with him. But the other kind of internal free agent, we got a lot of news over the week, and then some other news this morning was Kendrick Bourne. He was, you know, in the facility, or his agent was in the facility last week. They left without a deal. He confirmed on TikTok Live that he's going to test the market. But there was a report from, I believe, the Herald this morning that they did offer him a contract. Nothing on the details or the, you know, the money figures of that contract. But there is a deal on the table for Kendrick Bourne. So where are you kind of at with KB coming back?
I'd still like to see him come back. I think the continuity is important. They talk about weaponizing the offense. He's their most explosive receiver. I don't know where his knee's at, assuming his knee's healthy, but I wouldn't overextend to get him back. Now, it's a weak wide receiver class, and I think he knows that, and I think he's using that to his leverage, as he should, and he has every right to do, and, you know, I'm not faulting him for it. I wouldn't overextend to get him back. I would like to see him back, but, you know, if he goes and signs somewhere for, like, 1 year, $10 million, that's going to hurt. Like, I'd give him that. The thing that would worry me, and I wonder if this is the holdup, if it's not the money, if it's the years, if they don't want to give multiple heavily guaranteed years to a guy coming off, you know, 28-year-old guy coming off torn ACL, I would understand that. And that's just, I mean, that's always going to be an impasse. He can't untear his ACL. You can't get past that. So.
Yep. His market will kind of be interesting because it's a weak free agent class, as you said, but the talent in the draft is, you know, so deep and so rich at that position. You wonder if teams are going to be like, you know, do we pay Kendrick Bourne $8-9 million a year, or do we just draft a guy in the third round? You know, someone said $15 million. I think that was PFF, but they had it like 2 years for $15 million total, so about $7.5 million.
I would absolutely do that. Yeah. If you can get him for that, 2 years, $15 million, probably $10 million of that's guaranteed. That's, I think, close to the deal he's on now. I would absolutely do that.
Yeah. I think the deal he signed was 3 for $15 million. So that's just, you know, $2.5-3 million more a year there for KB. So I would absolutely do that. But you have a crowded wide receiver room, and I think, you know they want to add better, more explosive players, right? Weaponize the offense in that room. So then, you know, if you bring KB back, it's a crowded room. So you're probably you know, we talked about moving off Parker, probably try to get out of Juju's contract if you can. But, you know, that's the one thing with KB is, you know, where are you counting on him like next year, especially off the knee injury, right? Like, are you counting on him being a wide receiver three, or is he more in that wide receiver four, wide receiver five range? And then you have a lot of those guys and a lot of those options. So that'll be kind of interesting to see how that plays out and that whole room plays out.
Yeah. And again, it would be so much easier if you could just say, oh, you know, upgrade, you know, just let him walk in. I don't know if there's going to be an upgrade. That's just the way this class is shaking out. I saw one of the teams that you mentioned is market. One of the teams that Mass Live reported was interested in was the Bills, and another one was the Texans. So you're looking at, does this become a carousel with Noah Brown and Gabe Davis and that kind of thing?
Yep. And those are two contenders too. So right. How does that kind of play out in his eyes? But yeah, they offered him a contract. I mean, one of the first things Jerod Mayo said when at his introductory press conference, when someone asked him how he wants to get the offense back on track, he said, we need more energy, and you can't get more energy out there that Kendrick Bourne provides. So you assume they want him back. Obviously they did offer him a deal, but you'll see how that kind of shakes out. I guess the other big free agent news of the day is Russell Wilson is officially, or not yet officially, but going to be free on the league new year. They ate about 80.
Didn't we know this? Why is everybody freaking out about this? Wasn't this reported in like December?
It was reported, and then Sean Payton at the combine said, you know, he was talking about the jerseys with the names crossed off, and he's like, oh, we hope the next guy isn't going to be crossed off. So like, I think the writing was very much on the wall, but I think they just kind of made it official. So $85 million they ate. Are you feeling Russell Wilson and, you know, Pat's Nation, let's ride here for kind of this bridge QB?
Yeah, I'm out. I'm out. He's not going to want to be a mentor. He's not good anymore. Everybody is trying to get like the best quarterback possible to be. That's not the point of the mentor, because you want the young guy to play. The young guy's your talented quarterback. You just want somebody who's going to work with him, teach him, help him. And if he has to play a couple games, he plays a couple games. Russell Wilson's none of those things. Russell Wilson's not. And look, he should be willing to do that, because besides that, his career is pretty much tapped. That's clear at this point. But it sounds like he's not going to. So he's going to want a lot of money. He's not going to be great in the room. Hard pass. Hard pass on Russell Wilson.
Yep, I'm with you. And he doesn't even seem like a great kind of fit in this offense, right?
No,
like prioritize. I mean, he's not like kind of similar to Deshaun Watson. You know, he can move around a little bit, obviously not as much as he could have back in his prime, but like you mentioned, you know, Van Pelt's so big on footwork and all this stuff, and he just doesn't seem like a good fit schematically. And then you mentioned all the mentoring stuff. Like, he's gonna want to go somewhere and start and play and get paid handsomely probably to do so. And if you're drafting a guy at number three overall, that's not what you're looking for in a mentor. So, you know, as Brian says, you'd rather have Flacco, you'd rather have Jacoby Brissett or one of those more veterans who's not expecting to play 17 games and, you know, can just be there for a young rookie quarterback and kind of help him along the way.
Right. Exactly.
Yep. But, I don't know what else. Free agency, Christian Wilkins not getting the franchise tag. So that's another big name down there in Miami that's shaking loose. I know we talked, maybe that's where a lot of the talent is in free agency at defense. The Herald reported the Patriots want to add an elite defender. Unfortunately, Legarius Sneed, the Chiefs corner, got tagged. So he's not going to hit the market. Looks like they're wrapping up a deal with Chris Jones, or going to wrap up a deal with Chris Jones in the next week. So he's not going to hit the market. But what about Christian Wilkins? Do you have any interest in, you know, pairing him with Christian Barmore there in the middle of that defensive line?
I'm not going to say no. I'm not going to say no to a really good player at the end of the day, but I don't want them to change too much what they do schematically. That would represent a pretty big change. I'd rather pay a little more and get a guy like Brian Burns or a guy like Josh Allen, one of those like truly elite edge rushers that they just make more of an impact. And with Matthew Judon in the last year of his contract and getting up there with Josh Uche, a pending free agent, I'm not going to sit here and be mad if they sign Christian Wilkins. Like, they'll innovate, and him and Barmore on the field together would be a ton of fun. Don't get me wrong. But if I have my pick of the guys that are available, I'd rather spend a little more and go get the edge rusher person. I just think you're getting more bang for your buck at that point. Yep. I'm not going to complain about, and this is going to sound ridiculous, I'm not going to complain about driving a Porsche. But if it's a Porsche or Ferrari, and I have the money to buy either, if it's a Porsche or Ferrari, I'm going Ferrari, right? So I just, Christian Wilkins would be a good signing. He'd be a very good signing. Make a great signing. Like, if you're going to really give out a bit. Now, I change it if, like, there was somebody on offense that would really be the home run, and that's the guy they want to throw the big bag at. And then maybe Christian Wilkins is your second guy, right? He's your Hunter Henry to Matthew Judon from the last time that they had this big spending spree. That I could be talked into. I don't know that that guy exists on the offensive side of the ball this year, especially, I mean, Mike Evans, T. Higgins would have qualified as those guys, but they're not going to be available now. So, yeah, I want the edge rusher. If that's going to be the – if you're going to make a splash on defense – and Sneed's out as well. Like, I would count Sneed in the Burns Allen splash category, but if you're going to make a splash, make a splash. Go get a planet player, an all-pro player. I don't know if you saw the channel media market research survey that came out today.
I saw some of the ones you were just tweeting out. Yeah.
So one of the ones was, you know, which player on the team do you admire the most? Which to me essentially means like, who's the fan's favorite player, right? Matthew Slater was number one. He's obviously gone. The second was a tie between Jabril Peppers and Christian Barmore, which I have nothing against those guys. Like, two guys that can totally be a face of the franchise, but those aren't, they're not putting those guys on the graphic for primetime games. Yeah. Those guys aren't going to be top 50 in the league in jersey sales.
And they don't have Bill to put out there either now.
That's a good point. I'm not saying an edge rusher is the most, you know, the sexiest position, but I mean, you're talking about guys that can be first team all pro at a premium position. That's the kind of guy I'd try to go after.
Yep. Do you also think it would be kind of weird if they threw a bag at Christian Wilkins and they didn't give Christian Barmore like a rich extension before they did so?
Well, just that's kind
of a weird dynamic there.
That's signing Steph Gilmore when Malcolm Butler is a year away from being a free agent. If that's the other thing with Wilkins, that's actually a good point. I even think of that. If they signed Wilkins without giving Barmore an extension, the instant thought is they're doing this for a year, because they know they're not bringing Barmore back. It's Trevor Story, Xander Bogaerts.
Yeah.
Now, they could extend Barmore and that becomes null and void, but I'd rather Barmore. He's been here. He's younger. I'd rather have Barmore. But I think that's a very fair question.
Yep. I agree. I'd rather have Barmore. And that's the whole thing, right? Like, draft, develop, and extend. Like, that's your own guy. You drafted him. He took a huge step forward this year into like a perennial player. So, you know, go extend him and go with that. But I think like those are kind of the two big names that got, you know, freed up today. Looks like they're hitting the market. There anything else like free agency? I know there was, you know, Mark Daniels from Mass Live said Josh Uche hasn't gotten an extent or contract offer yet. So we'll still kind of see with him. Not much else with some of the internal guys on New England, but I don't know, a week away from free agency here. What else are you looking for?
I mean, some of the second tier guys, they're going to make a splash somewhere, and maybe it's Wilkins, maybe it's Burns. I don't even know who would be on offense at this point.
It's Calvin Ridley, tough.
I guess. The more I think about it, we just talked a lot about how, you know, we like this tackle class. And I've said, the wide receiver class is deeper. Get your tackle, and then you can figure out what you're doing at receiver. But I'm almost starting to feel like now, quarterback at three, right? Still doing that. Take the tackle second. Even maybe trade up. Do the Kyle Duggar trade. Your second and your third. Trade up into the back end of the first round. Really take advantage of the depth in this wide receiver. I got that completely backwards. I'm thinking of my mock draft. Wide receiver, trade back up in a quarterback at three, trade back up, get your wide receiver. Does Brian Thomas, A.D. Mitchell fall into the mid-20s, that 25, 26, 27 range? Do the reverse of the trade you did to get Kyle Duggar a couple years ago. Sign Tyron Smith, re-sign Michael Nwenu. Tyron Smith is kind of a bridge tackle. You draft a guy like a Tylan Crable, like Frank Crump later on, and then next year you may tackle the premium investment. Next year you may tackle the first round pick. That's kind of starting to grow on me
yeah,
a little bit. And part of that is how well some of the wide receivers tested. And I had 8 wide receivers in the first round of my mock draft, and that would be a record. Almost half the first round, 15 to 32 was receivers and tackles, and then another 5 quarterbacks. I'm starting to wonder, do you get aggressive? Do you move up? Do you get one of these? Because there's a lot of good receivers, but do you move up? Do you get one of the great receivers? Because in the same sense that, you know, when I said like, oh, you can get guys early on day 2 who would normally be first round picks. You can also get guys probably in the 20s that would usually be top 15. I think most years, A.D. Mitchell would be top 15 pick. Brian Thomas might end up being a top 15 pick, like outright,
definitely last year they probably would have been.
Probably first or second receiver off the board.
Yeah.
But, you know, if A.D. Mitchell falls into the 20s, if Brian Thomas kind of slides, which I don't think will happen, but would you, you know, give up a bit to get up? Even if, you know, Thomas, you're probably looking at like right around the 20s, 20, 21, 22. But if A.D. Mitchell falls like 25, 26, 27, do you move up? Do you just, you know, duct tape the hell out of the tackle position with Tyron Smith and Mike Onwenu is a long term, but duct tape the hell out of left tackle position. And then you just know, all right, next year we're going all into left tackle. Like we're going to move up, get the guy. We're going to just, however we have to make it happen, we're going to make it happen. That idea is starting to grow on me a lot more. I'm not saying it's what they have to do. I think there's multiple ways you can go about it. I think taking the tackle on day 2 and still just really hoping you hit on like a third round guy, or trying to find your Puka Nacua, I think that's a viable option as well. If they believe in their ability now to scout wide receivers on this new system. And I think they will do a better job of doing it based on the way the new system is built. The last system was built on fit within the scheme. So nobody was a fit for their scheme because their scheme was so far removed from the way college offenses operate in the modern era. I think that was a major problem. Now it's just by value and they're going to be running a different scheme. I'm not telling you they're going to go out and, you know, again, find Puka Nacua, but if they trust that, I still think that's a viable option too, but I'm warming up more to wide receiver being the second pick. Again, Tyron, this is all contingent on you get Tyron Smith as a bridge, you bring Mike Onwenu back, and then you go into the draft next year and you hope you end up with like a Miles Frazier or a Marquez Cox or a Zion Nelson or somebody like that.
Yep. I agree with you, but let me just kind of spin it and, you know, ask you, because we've been saying for 2 years or maybe even longer, like we're tired of them duct taping the tackle position together, right? So
right. Last year they didn't even do it. Let's be clear. They didn't even duct tape it. It was scotch tape.
So is that just because maybe your kind of timeline has changed for the last 2 years with Mac? You're like, okay, like let's go. Let's build this thing up with your rookie quarterback. And now you're looking at maybe a new rookie quarterback and that clock resets and you're going for a longer rebuild? Or is it more because there's some enticing late round prospects, or just because the receivers are so talented? But just like to argue the other side, like why the change in approach now all of a sudden?
I wouldn't say it's a change. I would say I'm adding it to the list of approaches I would legitimately consider. Okay. I think one is, again, the wide receivers testing better than expected, the timeline changing. And I would say too, just last year, We talked about them bridging it last year. They didn't do it. I think we talked like Tyron Smith would represent a legitimate, like you're still fixing the problem by signing a guy like Tyron Smith. You're just fixing it for 24. You're not fixing it long-term. I'm okay with that. At this point, just get it fixed. At this point, me and Evan spent the original Patriots beat episodes talking about them needing a tackle. It's a year. We've never done a Patriots beat show. There's never been a Patriots beat show where the Patriots were locked in at left tackle, or Patriots beat offseason show, I guess. They brought Trent Brown back and he had a couple windows there, but there's never been a Patriots offseason show where you could feel good about what they had at left tackle. It's literally never happened. At least with Tyron Smith, I feel like we're going to get through the year and not have to be like, all right, well, do they need to give it over to Vidarian Lowe? Do they need to make a trade at the deadline? Do they need to flip sides? Do they need to kick Cole Strange outside? All this just nonsense. Tyron Smith should be able to just hold that down for a year. And then, yes, next year on the offseason, again, we'll have to go back through it. But it won't be, man, it was such a disaster. They have to address it. It was like, all right, they temporarily plugged the gap. Now what do they do? And if plugging that gap in that way, because there's also never been a Patriots beat show where we felt great about where they were at wide receiver. The show started January 21, just for the record. There's never been a Patriots beat show where we felt great where they were at wide receiver. So if you go out and get Brian Thomas, go out and get A.D. Mitchell, and he's a stud, and you take the quarterback third overall, and he's promising. All right, now it becomes a lot. Like, we're going to sit here next year, and we're not going to discuss anything else. We're only going to talk tackles. That's all we're going to talk about. So, and that's fine. That's fine. That's good. That's a plan being in action, and you're checking off needs one by one. So that's kind of where I'm at with it. It's just, there's more than one way to skin a cat, right? And if they can just get this thing plugged for now, if they can get the tackle position plugged for now with the legitimate start, not Calvin Anderson, not 34-year-old Riley Reiff, like Tyron Smith's not what he once was. He's not, I'll say, but I think you get at least one good year out of him, maybe two, but I think you can get one serviceable top half of the league left tackle year out of him. If doing that allows you to fix all these other positions long term, next year we go back to it. And it's like, all right, now we're getting serious at tackle. Because I just don't. We actually did a show a couple of weeks ago because I remember because Ahmed clipped it, where I essentially made the same argument about wide receiver with Mike Evans. That option doesn't exist. You can't temporarily plug wide receiver. Maybe Calvin Ridley, but Calvin Ridley's not that good. Where I think you even feel great about it going into this season. I still think you're entertaining a wide receiver in the top 100. You're obviously not short-term plugging the hole at quarterback. That's just not how that position works at all.
Yep.
The bridge quarterback means to get you to the next guy. He's not going to be competitive. He's not going to be good. Tackle, I see Tyron Smith, and I'm like, all right, they can actually get a legitimate player here. Just take care of that. And then, yeah, you hammer quarterback and wide receiver in the draft, grab some developmental guys later, but we're not going to have to be sweating out the left tackle position all year.
Yep. Especially, you know, if you can get one of those developmental guys we talked about earlier, mid rounds, Javon Foster, Frank Crum, the UCF guy, or, you know, maybe like a Jerron Christian, a cheap guy in free agency who was on Cleveland last year that has a lot of experience with this offense and that regime, that would be a pretty good way to go about it. If you're really sold on one of those wide receivers at that spot. What about, you know, a lot of Tyron Smith talk. Are you with Jonah Williams maybe for that left tackle spot, or do you think he's going to be, you know, kind of a longer deal and too much money to be, you know, maybe your bridge left tackle?
I think if you're signing him, he's just the guy. He's
your not, left tackle,
right? The ceiling's probably not as high immediately, but I mean, you're going to get multiple years and you're going to roll with him. Drafting a guy, taking a guy in the draft, I think you get a better ceiling. And Tyron Smith, I think you get a better player for 1 year, but there's no long-term option. Yeah, I'd consider Jonah Williams. I'd consider him, but I'd rather just... Signing him wouldn't be a bad move, but I'd almost rather just take or sign Tyron Smith and just wait till next year and see what the class looks like next year before committing to anybody long-term.
Yep. Kind of agree with you there. But maybe non-tackle, we haven't heard a lot about the tight end spot. Hunter Henry, free agent. Someone brings up in the chat, Dalton Schultz would be a perfect fit, who we heard, was it Aaron Wilson last night, said the Patriots might, you know, look into adding Dalton Schultz. Could be a good fit in that Alex Van Pelt offense that relies a lot, again, on that tight end position. So how you like Dalton Schultz? Is he kind of on your radar, or do you think he's just going to kind of end back up with the Texans there?
I wouldn't be surprised if he goes back to Texas. I like Noah Fant. I've come around on Noah Fant. Obviously, the two former Browns tight ends, Austin Hooper and Harrison Bryant.
Harrison Bryant.
Right. Yep. Make the most sense because Van Pelt has experience with them. But Noah Fant's everything I want in a tight end, man. He's big. I'm just trying to pull up his measurables here. Big guy, 6'4", 250. Good athleticism, good pop. Catch the ball. He can block. He's factor in the red zone. He's just a good, solid. Well, I'm not saying he's Rob Gronkowski, but he's like a good, solid, well-rounded tight end. Dalton Schultz isn't as much of a blocker, I would say. And look, maybe they bring back Farrell Brown, and that ultimately doesn't end up mattering. But in this system, you're going to play tight end. You're going to block. Fant's good at that. He's physical in the run game. Schultz is a better player, but is he worth the significant more money he's going to get than Fant? I think you're going to end up getting similar production from either one of them.
Yep. agree with you there. Again, it seems like, you know, the big, if they're going to dish out a big contract, which this much money, they probably will. Like, it seems like it's going to come on the defensive side of the ball. And then you're going to get some, you know, look for some value signings. You know, I know Noah Brown, the wide receiver's name was thrown out there. So some value signings on that offensive side. We'll have to pull this one up, you know, going back to the combine a little bit, because there was one of the big storylines of the combine week was JJ McCarthy. We talked about it yesterday. We ranted about it yesterday, how he seems to really be climbing the ranks. And now there were some reports and some mock drafts out there that he could even be in play for New England at number three there. So if it's going to happen, I'm with Ed here and like trade back and get him. And hopefully you compile a whole cupboard full of picks. But that was one of the big things out of the combine week was, you know, this JJ McCarthy, and maybe it's smokescreen season, but it, you know, JJ McCarthy really seems to be gaining some steam up these draft boards.
Dude, I still don't see it. I still, as a top three pick, like, and I had him going 11th on my mock draft today. And you're actually all going to be surprised when I release my updated quarterback rankings tomorrow, 98.5thesports.com. Okay. But if you're a team with nobody around him and he has to start year one, this is Zach Wilson. This is Zach Wilson all over again, all over again. Now, a team like Minnesota, if they get Kirk Cousins back and he can sit and it's like, all right, you like him, so you have to take him at 11. You can't really wait. But you got all these good receivers. You got a good offensive line. You can afford to make the investment, right? You're only picking that high because guys were hurt last year. Okay. Like, you can sell me on JJ McCarthy at 11 in those circumstances. It's not exactly what I would do, but there's a cogent thought process behind that. But you Mike Tannenbaum on TV today saying JJ McCarthy is a better college quarterback than Jane Daniels, which is not even the conversation. It's a separate conversation. That's wrong. It's ridiculous. It's getting out of hand. It's starting to remind me a lot of Will Levis. Around this time last year, out of nowhere, the talking heads started telling us that Will Levis was a top 10 pick. I have zero idea where that came from.
Top five even at times.
Well, right? I was going to say, as we got close to the draft, he was going, it was on Reddit, remember, that he was a lock to go second the day before the draft. And it was never on his tape. It was fine at the combine. Fine at the Senior Bowl, like solid, but there was never anything outside of speculation in that whole, oh, well, he interviewed great and he's a winner and teams love the way he talked to him and guys play. Like, there was never any tangible on field anything that suggested Will Levis was a top five pick. And he went probably about where he should have gone. He was what, the first pick, the second pick on day two, which was about right for him. JJ McCarthy feels the same way. I feel like I am missing something massive that nobody else is seeing. And I wonder if it's going to be the same thing again, where I don't think he'll fall. He's got a bit better of a makeup than Levis. I would rank him ahead of Levis if they were in the same draft, but you know, he's going to end up falling to like 20 or something, right? He's going to fall to the Steelers. They're going to have him compete with Kenny Pickett or something like that. I still don't see it. I still don't see it with him. And I think especially for a team like the Patriots, again, if you're Minnesota, if you're the Jets, the Jets should be investing all their assets towards building under Rodgers.
Tackles, yeah.
Right. But, like, if you're Minnesota, if you are, I would even say late in the first round, Jacksonville, and you're unsure about Trevor Lawrence's future, there aren't that many old quarterbacks in the league anymore.
Seattle.
Yeah, actually, Seattle's a good one. Even, honestly, Atlanta. And he would have to play right away, but at least he's going into a really good offense. There's a lot of talent around him and it's a system that'll be good for him. Like, you can sell me on that. I wouldn't take him eighth, but if that's where Atlanta takes him, I'm gonna look at that. And as I've been preaching with the Patriots the whole time, if you believe in the guy, take him. You don't play games. And if Atlanta believes in him, fine. Like, I think that's a good, I could understand how they would believe in him. I can understand how they would do that. I don't understand how the Patriots, the Cardinals, else at the top of the draft there. The Giants, I don't understand. Well, I guess the Giants, he could sit behind Daniel Jones.
Yeah.
So maybe the Giants make sense. It's really the Patriots. It's really the Patriots and the Commanders. There's nothing there. Commanders have some receivers. So it's the Patriots. There's nothing there. You are bringing a guy who came from one of the most talented offenses in college football. He had Blake Corum. He had Roman Wilson. He had Courtland Loveland, who's going to be a first-round pick next year at tight end. He had the best offensive line in the country, the Joe Moore Award-winning offensive line. And you're going to give him this? How do you think that's going to end? So I just don't see it. I just don't see it. And it seems like a lot of it's fueled by the amazing combine performance everybody's saying he had. I'm still waiting to see it. If somebody could send it to me, it'd be great, because the one I watched, he was fine. He was so-so. I don't see it. I don't see the hype. I don't get the hype. I guess with this trade, I think people just really want to trade back. I think after years and years and bitching that Bill trades back too much, everybody suddenly wants to trade back because they're afraid to make the pick. You have people making four or five trades back in their mock drafts because they're just so wired that, well, it's Patriots. The guy that drafted in the first round is going to be a bust. I'd rather them get more assets and pick lower so it's not as embarrassing. It's a new era. You got to have faith in the pick, man. You got to have faith in the pick.
Yep. So we'll see. Maybe he follows a similar Will Levis path and he ends up dropping down there in the second round. But where things look,
I will say this. I may have dragged you into this. This is going to be, it's not even that I don't like JJ McCarthy. I have nothing against him personally. It's more the narrative around him. Like I said yesterday, it's the JJ McCarthy industrial complex. His carrying trait is his PR staff. It's the way he's talked about does not match up to what's on the film. But that clip got sent around yesterday. They're playing me ripping JJ McCarthy's combine in Felgren, Mass today, which shout out to them for playing that. Love the shout out. But congratulations. You're the host of the anti-JJ McCarthy podcast now.
Unfortunately. I mean, I said it yesterday and I said it before. Like, I want to like him. Like, listening to his media interview at the combine and watching some of the other interviews he did, like, he seems like a really good kid. Like, had a lot of success at Michigan, obviously, but I don't know. You put the film on, you see the football in his hands, and like, there's some enticing traits, obviously. Like, the Michigan State game is really impressive, but then when you watch the full picture, it's just not a guy, like, not a top five pick or top 10 pick. It's a, you know, you said it perfectly. It's a guy you want to sit for a year and learn and grow. And he's 21 years old, and maybe it works out perfectly for a team. But if you're the New England Patriots at number three with just a roster that is severely lacking talent, it's just probably, it's not a pick that I'm willing to take at number three right there.
Brian, you're sitting at third overall. You're only allowed to take a Big Ten quarterback. Are you taking JJ McCarthy or Tanner Mordecai?
I loved watching Tanner last year, but I think I'm gonna go JJ on that one.
Is Tanner in the draft? I don't even know if he's in the draft.
I don't know, honestly.
I know what's his name went back, the other one.
Who was it before quarterback?
No, who was it?
Oh, Graham Mertz. He went back.
Graham Mertz. Yeah, Graham Mertz going back. Graham Mertz is gonna be one of those guys that's in school for 50 years.
Yeah.
Graham Mertz is gonna be on that Case Keenum, Perry Ellis track where, you know, he's gonna be collecting those $600 NCAA video game checks for a long time.
he'll stumble into a training camp a few years in a row. He'll be in New England as the next Nathan Rourke in a year or two.
Yeah, probably. I don't think Tanner Mordecai declared for the draft. So,
oh, interesting.
I don't see any. Oh no, he did. He did.
Okay,
he's in the draft. So
maybe he'll just be Nathan Rourke in a few months.
I did my so I updated my quarterback big board. I actually went all the way down to quarterback 20. It gets shallow quick, man. Shout out Andrew Peasley though.
Oh yeah, Wyoming boy. That's go watch Frank Crum, and then you can watch some Andrew Peasley.
That's
there.
Right. That's a great
in Wyoming. All right.
Yeah.
I think we can wrap it up there. Then again, those are some final combine thoughts. More JJ McCarthy talk and some free agency preview as well, which starts. You know, that initial tampering period starts officially in 1 week. The franchise tag deadline is tomorrow at 4 p.m. So we should start getting some action relatively soon. We will be back Wednesday, Thursday this week, probably Thursday, but
something
sure,
like that. Yeah.
Make sure you follow the Patriots at CLNS Twitter page to get the notification when we do go live. You can subscribe to the channel, follow the channel as well. Follow Alex on Twitter at Real Alex Barth. Head over to 985thesportshub.com. He's got his QB rankings coming out tomorrow morning, it sounds like, so make sure you check out that. And you can follow me on Twitter at I am Brian Hines. and head over to patspulpit.com for all my Patriots coverage as well. Thank you all, as always, for tuning in. Go watch the Bruins. Hopefully they don't blow another 2-goal lead here, as they're already up 2 after the first period. But thank you again, and we'll see you guys later this week.